Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel Podcast.
We've got lots and lots of things to talk about and to do today.
Covering the territories from the 1940s to the 1990s.
It's the best thing going today.
Interviewing wrestlers, referees, authors, and other media personalities that have made the sport of professional wrestling great.
The cream, yeah. The cream of the crop.
And now, here's your host, Tony Richards.
Hey there, everybody. This is Tony Richards, and I want to welcome you to our Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel podcast. On our show, we're tracking and documenting the history of pro wrestling from its beginnings through 1990, with special emphasis on the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s pre-video era. We're profiling personalities by having the authors who've studied their lives and written their stories. We're studying and revisiting territories and the booking offices that control them, historic towns where the history of pro wrestling is so deep, and the legendary buildings where the fans came to see their favorite stars and storylines play out virtually every single week. We're covering all four of these dimensions of the sport of pro wrestling, and I'm so appreciative you've decided to allocate some of your time to go on this journey with us through this show. If you like what we're doing, you might want to think about visiting my Substack channel by searching for Tony Richards 4, and there you can subscribe to my daily wrestling history newsletter, where you'll find birthdays of wrestlers past and present, an RIP salute daily to those in the business who we want to honor that have passed on, an event on that day in pro wrestling history, and much, much more. You'll also have an archive of this podcast and special updates on my Dory Funk Sr. book. All of that is provided for free. But I do have a special vault of writings for paid subscribers. And by subscribing to that, that helps support me and my research and the work to do all of this for you. You'll find it all on my Substack channel, substack.com. Search for Tony Richards 4 and the Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel. You can also follow me on X at Tony Richards 4 or join our Facebook group, Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel. Okay, with all that out there, let's go to today's show and today's guest. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel video and audio podcast. I'm your host, Tony Richards, and I'm joined today. It's a super amazing honor and a whole lot of fun for me to be joined by Jerry Oates, who is coming to us from his home in Georgia. Jerry, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, Tony.
Man, doing fine. Thank you so much. I see you're wearing an Oates Gym shirt.
Yeah.
You got to always promote, right?
Always. Promote. Yeah. Always.
Well, listen, I want to talk, we can talk about anything, but I primarily want to talk about this time 50 years ago, you were, and your brother were really doing some good business in Kansas City, which is just a few miles to the west of me here in Columbia. And I know you wrestled here in Columbia a few times.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so I want to talk about that. So the thing is, and here's how I want to kind of start. Probably because everybody gets an idea in their head based on the last kind of parts of things. And in the last days in the 80s, the Kansas City territory was not all that great. It wasn't selling a lot of tickets, wasn't drawing a lot of fans. And really, that's what people talk about when they talk about the territory. But you were there at a time where it was pretty good, right?
It was pretty good, yeah. It was pretty good. There was I got out there before my brother, 3 months before him. And then he was caught up. You know about the split that happened in Georgia in the early 70s, right?
Yeah, the Gunkel and
exactly. So, you know, all the boys except one guy went with, which was the original group, they went over to Ann except Bob Armstrong. And I was wrestling over in Alabama, and I'd already had a starting date back with, you know, the Georgia office, and the split happened. So when my first night back, I was booked with Gunkel. I had heard, but I didn't know what was going on because I wasn't here. And then I wrestled for them like 3 nights. And then the promoter here in my hometown, Fred Ward, he called me, and, at the time, my wife's dad was the promoter in Savannah, and they stayed with the original office, not the new group, but the new group was the original office, you know.
Right,
so
right.
Ann and Tom Ernesto was doing the booking, so I went back over there with them. So shortly after that, they got my brother. He went with Gunkel.
Well, not to throw you off base here, but your father-in-law in Savannah, he that was a tough decision for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, because, you know, he got along with Ernesto. He got along as good as anybody could with Gunkel. You know, Ray was Ray, you know.
But Ray controlled the state.
He controlled it. But so, like Fred Ward, he promoted Columbus, Macon, and Albany and ran spot shows. My father-in-law in Savannah, he promoted Savannah, Statesboro, and he had that whole East Coast, Brunswick, Jekyll Island, great spot shows back then. I mean, spot shows were just as good as, you know, like Jekyll Island, they ran it maybe once or twice a year. They didn't burn the spot shows up, even if they did fantastic, you know.
Sure.
They protected those spot shows. He had towns like Surrency, Baxley, just, you know, it was a great territory. So that now there's two offices here. So it was time for me to go. I've been here a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Harley was doing the booking here.
Yeah, he was.
He said,
yeah, he came in to replace Watts.
Exactly. And so he said, you want to go to Kansas City? I said, yeah, I'll go. It was time for me to go. You know, I'd only been in the business like 2.5 years.
And for our listeners who may not know, Harley was a partner with Bob Geigel and Pat O'Connor, I think, in Kansas City.
That is correct.
And Harley was going out at this time, and he'd taken the job in Georgia. Kind of as a favor after his world title little run he had.
That was the first time I ever met him, when he had it the first time.
Yeah, and he went to Georgia to help out because Watts was wanting to go down to work for Eddie. And
right. So I got booked out there, and he told me, he said, I'm going to get your brother out of here. He said, I'll get him out there with you before it folds. And Barnett got in with Ernesto to kill it. I mean, that wasn't public, but that's what happened.
Well, it's always been interesting to me that as soon as the office died, Ernesto got hired.
He got hired. So the last main event in Atlanta for Gunkel, you know what it was?
No.
Ernie Ladd against Don Serrano.
Oh, my gosh.
Don Serrano's what, 5'4"?
Right.
Ernie's 6'10"?
Never really worked past
right.
the second
so,
match.
By the time my brother got there, Kansas City, in 74, they had already teamed me up with Mike George.
What a fantastic athlete.
So I just talked to him last week.
Did you really?
He's one of the few guys I stay in touch with.
Man, Mike I'd love to have him on sometime.
He'll
too.
Do it. Mike and I, but I had met him in Georgia early on when he was just starting. Just like I said, I started a little before him. So they had teamed Mike and I up. So my brother gets there. He don't like that. I'm going, just settle down, man. Mm-hmm. You just got here. And I know what's going to happen. They go team us up. But so we went to Quincy, Illinois. He'd been there about a week. And Geigel got me off to the side, who I love. I love working for Bob Geigel. He said, hey, pal, you got to do something about your brother. He said, his attitude around here ain't going to get it. I said, I know. I said, I'll talk to him. So I told him, I said, and my brother was always kind of a jerk. I'm just being honest.
Sure.
He was a jerk in the dressing room. Talented. My God, was he talented. And so I said, man, you got to straighten up. I said, they're not going to put up with that out here, man. This, you know, it's not a three town territory a night, you know. We see everybody every night.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, once in a while there'd be two towns a night, but that was rare.
You had to work together a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to get along, man. So anyhow, he straightened up. Then they tagged my brother and I. Then we were wide open from there.
I wanted to talk to you about, I mean, they really had, I don't, you and I have talked on the side before about Bob Geigel's, he wasn't the greatest booker in the world. I mean, he sat under Doc Sarpolis for years in Amarillo, and you can see a lot of Doc's booking in Geigel's work. But, I mean, he had three or four tag teams on top there in 74 and 75, and I want to walk through each one of them and get I want to get your thoughts on them. But when you and Mike George got the titles, you got them from the interns.
Right.
And Dr. Ken Ramey, and you had a – they did everything under the sun they could do with you guys. They got they got the announcer involved, you know.
Had every match, every kind of match you can imagine.
Right, and in six-mans, and got Dr. Ken in the ring. So what's your thoughts on the interns as a tag team?
They were a good team, but they were very temperamental. Very temperamental. It was like their way or the highway, you know. And then they teamed my brother and I up. Now we got to run with them.
Right.
And we had some good matches with them.
They left and came back.
Right.
They left after you and Mike got the titles, and then they came back after you and Ted got the titles.
Right. Now, we had some good matches with them. I mean, all over.
They were kind of put over everywhere they went.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that probably fed the ego some.
Yeah. They were – they figured they were the big dogs there, you know. Like Bob Brown had been there. I don't know how long Bob Brown had been there before I got there.
Long time, 10 years at least.
I had a lot of matches with him. Now, I'm going to give him credit now. That was one hard-working son of a gun when that bell rang. He worked hard. He worked – and Bob took care of him, you know. And I had a lot of matches with him. So they teamed my brother and I up. And we had every kind of match. I mean, from – way up in Iowa, all the way down to Wichita, to your town,
right.
Columbia, Quincy, Illinois. We all over, every night with them, every night.
So when they got Bill Kirsten involved, who was the longtime Kansas City television guy.
Yes, he was.
How did that go?
It went good. I mean, you know, Kirsten, I don't know if he had ever been in the ring or not. And Ramey, is Ken Ramey still with us?
I don't think so.
I asked Mike about it. He wasn't sure either.
Yeah, I don't think he is.
I don't even know where he was from.
I think he died in the late 70s, maybe.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm.
I know what he could do, though. Run speedometer back.
He drew some heat, too.
Oh, yeah. He could talk. I like Ken, you know. There was a place for him, you know, and he did a good job. And then they left. Then we worked with Okishikina and Yasu Fuji.
Right, right.
Had a lot of matches with them.
And you worked with them after you and Ted got going, right?
Right, exactly.
And I don't know if you noticed, and you probably remember, but in April – or maybe it was May, I can't remember, right in there somewhere. You guys actually, you did title switches in a couple of different towns.
Right.
Because back then, no one knew.
And yeah, exactly.
So you could do it in Wichita, and you could do it in Topeka, and you could do it in Kansas City, you could do it in Iowa, and those fans.
Nobody knew.
No, they didn't get the newspapers from the other towns. So they
Oh, we used to go to Sedalia, too.
Yep, you sure did. Every Tuesday. What'd you think of Fuji and Shekinah?
I had known Oki from here. And so they teamed him up out there. And I'm not bragging, but when I got in that ring, if there was 500 people there, or like I had wrestled in the Omni where there's 17,000 people there, I worked just as hard with the 500 or 200 there as I did for the thousands. And my brother and I would have said, we both don't care where, if we was in Sedalia, that was a hard town to draw in. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's not very big. You know,
it's not very big. And we worked just as hard there as we did when we went to St. Louis. And so one night we're in Kansas City. It's a good house. We go wrestle with them on the main event, Fuji and Oki. Going to go an hour. Well, Oki didn't want to work. He laid on his fanny. So we got to keep this thing rolling. After it was over, I mean, Fuji probably stayed in the ring 40 minutes, off and on, 40 out of 60. And so the match was over, and Geico came to us and said, that wasn't y'all's fault. He said, but I thought y'all was going to kill Fuji. And by that time, Oki came across the stage. I never saw Bob Geigel that upset in my life. He went berserk. He said, those three guys busted their butts out there, and you laid on your butt all night long, man. He said, I ain't putting up with it. I mean, Fuji and Bob probably couldn't walk for two or three days.
Well, Bob was an amateur, great amateur.
Yes.
And then he went to Texas, and he wrestled in Amarillo, where they didn't put up with not working hard. And Bob had a work ethic. I mean,
he did.
He worked hard. And so that was an expectation he had.
I'll tell you what kind of reputation he's got. When I had my gym here, one of my best friends was from Pennsylvania. Of course, he got the WWE. ELF, whatever they call it up there. So he was a paint contractor. I mean, he painted for the big dogs here in this town. I'm talking about big dogs. He said, I want you to go with me. He said, this guy was a retired general. He said, he's got cauliflower ears. I said, you're kidding. His name was Kenneth Lure. So he said, I'm going to go by he wants me to look at something he wants me to do. So we go out there. I said, hey, Colonel, General, I said, I'm Jerry Oates. He said, I'm Kenneth Lure. I said, I grabbed one of his ears. I said, I see you've been around the block. He said, yeah. He said, I wrestled in college. I said, really? I said, did you know any wrestlers that became professionals? He said, Bob Geigel. He said, I wrestled Bob Geigel. I said, what? I said, I wrestled. He knew Geigel. He knew Gunkel. Gunkel Russell, and I think Michigan, Purdue. So he knew him.
Yeah, and Bob was at Iowa.
At Iowa. I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, he said, I'm Russell Geigel. He said, I know him. I'm thinking, what a small world. I'm meeting a two-star general that mentioned Bob Geigel.
Tough guy. I mean, he had trouble in the business just because he wasn't that great an interview, but he really worked hard.
He wasn't nobody to monkey with, man.
Yeah.
He was nobody to monkey with.
Tough dude. You also had another tag team there. It was a brother team, the Cormier brothers, who wrestled as Martins in the United States.
I'm going to tell you about that. So Terry was the short one, wasn't he? And Tommy was a little taller.
Yeah.
So Terry was already there. He said, with that Canadian accent, he said, oh, man, he said, I can't wait till my brother gets here. He said, we're going to have some good matches. Well, we didn't know him from Joe Blow to Iceman because they'd been up in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
So he said, it's going to work great. He said, I'm the same height as your brother, and my brother's as tall as you are. I said, yeah, that's great. So the first night in Kansas City, I met him, and Terry was standing there, and so was his brother, Tommy. He looked at his brother. He said, well, I guess you're not as tall as he is. But the best tag match we ever had in our lives together was with them. It was one of those things that just clicked.
I mean, you guys did a couple hour Broadways together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that first night we did one with them, did you know the boys stayed and watched it? And Jesse Ventura, I've heard him say since then, that was the best tag match he ever saw.
Wow.
We were humping all night long.
Now, I think you told me one time when we were talking that they were speaking to each other in French-Canadian, and no one knew what they were saying to each other, right? I mean, including
he'd
you
give
guys.
He'd give it to us in English that said, when I tag him, he's going to come in and do this, boom, boom, boom. And the guys are sitting there on the stage, wow, how is this happening? Then we would give it to him in English, and he'd give it to it what was going to happen when he come in French.
Wow.
I've never been involved in anything like that ever in my life. And we had matches that were just absolutely unbelievable. Oh, unbelievable.
Those guys were fantastic. Now, Mike George was the Central States champion, I think, when you got there.
I'm sure he was.
And then he dropped it to one of the Martins. And then you had a program where you won the Central States singles title from Terry Martin.
I had a lot of singles with Bob Brown.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Yeah. Bob always kept the title, but you beat Terry for it, Terry Martin.
And Omar Atlas was there.
You mentioned Jesse. I mean, that was his second or so year in the business.
First
year. Roddy Piper's first year in the business, too.
I met Piper there.
I mean, he was a little scrawny guy.
Jesse had just come out of Minneapolis. Eddie Sharkey trained him. Gagne didn't train him. But he came there, broke as a church mouse, stayed at the, what was the name of that hotel downtown? The Chimes.
Mm-hmm.
Not real. I mean, he's broke. And I never forget, we saw him the first night. He was in the dressing room there in Kansas City. And he was laying on a table. When we come in, he sat up and introduced himself. And the whole time he was there, we never charged him trans to ride with us. Kind of took care of him, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And he was green as grass. I mean, like we all were at one time. I'm not knocking that. He was green. Everybody, I had several matches with him. And
everybody starts somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. And he stayed for a while, and then he went to Portland. He left there and went to Portland. Did well. And when I finally wound up out there a couple of years later, he was still there. So, Jesse was there. A lot of guys came in and out, like Terry Funk. Had a lot of matches with Terry.
Cyclone Negro.
Yeah. Eduardo Compontier.
Yep.
Tag partners with him one night. Red Bastine. You know, what would happen, they would be booked in St. Louis on Friday. And they'd come in and work Kansas City and the next night go to St. Louis. I mean, so fans got to see. These were guys that was in the magazines all the time, you know.
Well, and there was O'Connor was booking St. Louis.
Right.
So he had connections and made sure the guys got double shots and that kind
of thing. Yeah, so it worked out good. I know the first time I ever wrestled a world champion for the title was Jack Briscoe in St. Joe. I still got the article.
Wow.
Oates tries the world title tonight. Won an hour. I was a nervous wreck. Never wrestled a world champion. I had wrestled Pat since I've been there, but I'm talking about a current champion. And you know Jack's reputation.
Well, yeah, he carried himself very well.
He was a champion.
And he had, like all those amateur guys, he had quite the reputation.
He had the reputation. And you know, two-time NCAA heavyweight champion out of Oklahoma State, never defeated. What does that tell you?
Right.
He's a guy you don't mess with.
Right.
So I had a great match with him. And then I worked with him again when he came back through in Des Moines. So anyhow, Terry Funk comes in, and Jack had it a while. So I had a match with Funk, and he was the international heavyweight champion. So I beat him for the title. He comes back next week. the winner of this match is going to wrestle Jack Briscoe the next Thursday night, right?
In Kansas City.
I beat him again. I said, well, next Thursday night, I'm going to wrestle Jack. Well, I get to the building that Thursday night. Funk comes in. He's the world champion. He beat Jack in Miami the night before.
Oh, my. Was this his first match?
First
title defense after Miami?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a good trivia question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was Terry Funk's first opponent after he won the world title?
It was the next night in Kansas City. Wow. Then, of course, he was in St. Louis the next night. And the rest is history. But I met him in 1969, right before I got in the business. My sister was married to Dick Steinborn.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that too.
That's how I got in the business. And so my sister, I had a job while Dickie was training me. So my sister said, when you get off work, come by the house. I want you to meet somebody. Because I knew who all these guys were, but I hadn't met them. So I go in her house. There's Terry Funk.
Oh, my.
Neck bigger than his head. And so my brother-in-law said, you know, I'm training him to get into the wrestling game. He said, you're a little wormy, aren't you, kid? I weighed like 210. Terry weighed like, what, 250?
Yeah.
And he was young. He was young, too. And that's the first time I ever met him. And I was in Japan with him and wrestling him in Japan. And I was blessed.
So, Jerry, let me ask you, did your match with Jack go Broadway?
Yes, 1 hour.
And how long did your match with Terry go? Roundabouts. I guess my point is it was two different matches, right?
Two different matches.
I mean, Terry could work, but...
But he clowned a little too much for me.
Right.
You know, he'd get in the ropes and swing back and forth. My brother, Jerry and Jack were different. Dory and Terry were different. My brother and I were different. Outside the ring, we were different. Inside the ring, we were the same.
Mm-hmm.
But his brother, Dory Funk, was the best mechanic I ever saw.
I agree with you.
Oh. I mean, he was not a Jack Briscoe, you know, on the mat. Or Bob Roop or Danny Hodge. But as far as our business, I was in the business 20 years and I'm in Japan. Head up on the board that night, Oates versus Funk. I said, I'm going to wrestle Dory. Never wrestled him in my life. I watched him before I got in the business. Got in the ring with him. I've been in the business 20 years. I was in awe. I'm wrestling the master of our business.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing he... You ever seen the matches with him and Briscoe?
Oh, sure. Many times.
Well, that you don't have to say anything else.
Well, I was on a podcast last week, and we were talking about the Funks because I've got this book I'm working on about their dad. And the guy asked me, he goes, well, you know, since we're talking here, and both the Funks were world champions, and Funk Sr. was a world junior champion, who do you think the best world champion, best NWA world champion was? And I said, Dory Funk Jr. I mean, I didn't even hesitate.
Yeah.
He said, boy, you came out with that really fast. I said, well, listen, if it was just my opinion, then I might not know what I was talking about because I'm just a observer, right? But everybody I've ever talked to in the business that has wrestled him said that.
He was a master. He worked at his pace now. He probably did more hours than anybody.
And didn't you come out of the match looking better than you did before the match?
He didn't throw a lot of punches. Hardly ever you see him throw that when he hits you with that forearm.
Yeah, uppercut.
That first night I worked with him in Japan, I thought I was going to come out of my boots. I mean, he laid that dog in there. And Dory worked very snug. There was no daylight in his work. I mean, then I saw him in the hall two nights later. He traveled with the Japanese boys. I said, Dory, the other night, I said, I've been in the business 20 years. And that's the first time I ever worked with you. He said, I know we've never worked together. And I worked with him one more time over there. It was just like, God. he carried himself like a champion. Luther, I even wrestled Luther's on Atlanta TV. I was nervous wreck.
Oh, wow.
He carried himself like a champion.
How did Lou work with you?
They told me, they said, when he goes for that double wrist lock takeover, said, don't balk him. He said, if you do, he'll pull your shoulder off.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he was, well, he ate me up. I mean, I was green as grass.
Yeah.
But I got to know him, you know, and over the years, and there's a match of us on YouTube. He was, him and Les Thatcher were commentating it when we worked for Ann. And he was a nice man. A lot of guys didn't like him.
Yeah, he had a lot of class. That's why I wouldn't rank him as number one, though, is because he goozled guys. You know, if he didn't like them, or if he felt the need that night to prove a point,
he could do it.
He'd leave the local guy looking worse than he looked before, and that really wasn't the objective of the title.
No, but he could back it up.
But he had influences like Ed Strangler Lewis.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of those older guys that was their way back then, you know. So, you know, you're a product of who you surround yourself with.
Oh, well, absolutely. But, yeah, he could take care of himself. I mean, not that I tested him. But.
So you had two fantastic brother-in-laws in the business. You know, you mentioned Dickie Steinborn, who broke you in. And I've heard you tell that story before, that Dickie said he'd train you when he got ready.
That's what he told me.
So
it was hard to get in back then.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And it should have been, right? Don't you agree with that?
Yes. Absolutely.
Should be.
I
mean, you learn by that process.
I learned. On the way home from trips, he didn't tell me what I did good. He told me everything I did wrong. You should have done this when you did that. He was who he was, and he had some issues. But when it comes to talent, he was as talented as anybody that ever did it.
Yeah. Well, I've talked to you many times about his dad, Milo, and just how much respect you had for Milo.
Oh, my gosh. I used to just sit and look at him. He was a guy that was, he came over here in the 20s. He'd been in a concentration camp in Australia. He left Germany, World War One. They put him in, he got wound up in a concentration camp. And he got to tell me how that went. I said, he still had that strong German accent. You know about his strength and everything.
Oh, yeah. He used to be a circus strongman, right?
Yeah. I said, how did you get so strong? He's, you know the old saying, the stronger survive. He said, in that concentration camp, I made sure I had food to eat. He said, I worked out in there with whatever I could find. I don't know how he knew about all that. So anyhow, when he got out, now these are stories he told me. He said, I come to the United States. He don't speak any English, nothing. But they heard his strong man was coming. But he's never been in a lifting meet even back then. So they took him to Philadelphia. He's watching them. He's a young man. He's watching all this. He don't know about lifting weights. I mean, you know, barbells and all.
Sure.
He said, well, anyhow, make a long story short, he set three world records that day. Then he finally told them he wanted 500 pounds on that bar. They said, 500 pounds? That was unheard of back then. This is like 1926. What? They asked him, what was he going to do with it? Had an interpreter. He said he was going to squat with it. Well, there wasn't no squat racks. They said, how are you going to get that on your shoulder? He told me exactly how he did. He went to one end of that bar and stood it up and walked under it and laid it across his shoulders and squatted with it and dumped it.
No telling how many times he'd done that.
First man in the world squatting 500 pounds on a bar.
That we knew. I bet he'd done it.
There's no telling what he did in that prison. Probably guys in buckets and lifting them up and down.
But tells you what kind of discipline he had, though, you know.
So you can't make a living being a weightlifter. So they got him into the wrestling business, right? So he was telling me, I'm listening. I'm in awe. I'm 21 years old. I'm listening to all this. This is I've never heard of nothing like this. When he got in the business, there were no gyms. He got him a trailer, hauled his weights with him everywhere he went in a trailer. He said, I came from Birmingham. And I'm talking, he's telling me this in Orlando where he lived. He said, I came from Birmingham one night to Atlanta. It took all night to get there. You imagine what the roads looked like back then, like 32, whatever it was. He said, I go to the hotel, check in, go and load my trailer, work out, put my weights back in, get a little sun, go eat, take a nap, and then wrestle that night. Haul his weights with him.
Wow.
So did you know who Charlie Harbin was?
Oh, yes. In Georgia.
Charlie was something else. Charlie told me, he said, him and Milo were buddies. When I met Charlie, he was on up there.
I mean, I never got to meet Charlie, but I...
Now
that studying the business, I know who he is.
He was a character. He worked in the office for Ray. Because he used to wrestle. He said the first time he came to the Atlanta City Auditorium, see, those guys back then weighed like 175, 180. He weighed like 220. He said, of course, Schwarzenegger had hit the scene. He said he looked like Schwarzenegger back then. But the guy has never seen nobody look like that. Right. Now, how he knew about nutrition, I don't know. There wasn't how he knew.
Right.
I never, there was a thousand things I wanted to ask him. He said, he took his clothes off in that dressing room. I said, them guys are looking at him. He put his trunks on. He said he had veins coming down his trunks, went into his trunk, had veins all over his legs. He was tan, good looking, had curly hair. This is how he said. He said, when he come, there was a stage at the City Auditorium. You come off the stage and come down the steps to go to the ring. This is 1932. He said, those broads went crazy.
I imagine so.
Said he was tan. How he knew?
Well, if you look back at Schwarzenegger and Mickey Hargitay and those guys in the 50s, you can imagine 30 years before that.
How he knew about nutrition, I don't know. And down there in Florida, he was on up there when I met him. He had his gym.
He ran Orlando.
Till
Eddie got out of the business or did what he did.
We never talked
about this, but did Milo sort of, was he the inspiration for you to be in the gym business?
No. Milo was.
Milo. Yeah, Milo. That's Milo, what I, yep. That's what I meant. Yeah. Was Milo the inspiration for you to be in the gym business?
Yes. But he did. It was on Orange Avenue there in Orlando. So Dickie took me by there. I'm looking around. You remember, you seen those round barbells that had the round balls on them, silver balls? They used to put shot in there to make the weight. He had some he used in there, but you couldn't use them. He had them in racks, and they were locked. He had pictures. I've never seen pictures of people like that. He had pictures of movie stars he knew, actors he knew, of course, actors and strong men, and I'm walking around in that gym, and Dickie said, let's go. I said, I'm looking at these pictures. He said, they're just pictures. I said, you've seen them all your life. I've never seen that. It was like a museum. It was a museum almost. So he had 75 members. That's all he wanted. It wasn't to make money.
Right.
But if you worked out in his gym, you did it his way.
And you probably got that reputation of working out in his gym.
He was a perfectionist. Even his house, everything was, he's German. Everything's perfect.
Now, did he work with guys that came there to work out? Did he
like, to work to lift weights, not wrestle?
Yeah, train them to lift weights.
Yeah.
And I'm saying. If you worked out with him, you probably had a reputation. You know,
if you didn't squat, you was out the door. You had to do squat. That's just who he was. I mean, right. And he had 75 members. That's all he wanted. I mean, on Mondays he was closed because he had wrestling. During the week, you know what time he opened? 4:30. Closed at 9.
In the morning?
No, 4:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, opened up.
Stayed
open till 9 at night.
It's 24/7 stuff like we see today. But he didn't need it for a living. He wanted enough members to pay the power bill and the rent.
So basically 3-4.5 hours.
Yeah. That was Tuesday through Friday. Saturday was from 9 to 1, closed Sunday and Monday.
So for 4 days a week and a little bit on Saturday, he ran 75 guys through there in 4.5 hours.
He wouldn't let nobody else join. And he ran my brother-in-law out of the gym. So when I moved down there, my brother-in-law was running the gym for him.
Oh, wow.
Right? His son. Dickie smoked a pipe. So Milo comes in there one afternoon. He was still working out, Milo was. I mean, he's still, at 70 years old, he coming in and squatted 405. 70 years old. He was still big, big, gigantic hands. He was a big bone man, still proud. So he opened that desk drawer, saw that pipe. He didn't say nothing. Found Dickie in the gym. He said, when I come back in this gym, that pipe better not be in that desk drawer. Dickie, whatever. That's my daddy. I'll do what I want. Milo comes down there the next day or so. Opens the desk drawer, there's the pipe. Milo shuts it, don't say a word. Dickie comes the next afternoon to open the gym. Milo changed the locks and he fired him. He never worked in that gym again.
Well, I'm telling you, man, the dude sounds like he's got discipline. He didn't care.
He had discipline, and Dickie bucked him. Every time we would go by his house, he'd get in an argument with his daddy. Dickie was in his like 38, 39, really retired. You know, he worked for his daddy. Dickie did the programs, you know, helped him with the matches. And he bucked him. He bucked him on everything the man said.
Hard to figure.
I will never figure it out. Had a daddy like that. I mean, but that was his daddy. See, I was in awe of his daddy.
Sure.
Well, I'd never been around a person.
Probably was like a dad to you.
He was. I know. I'll tell you what he did. My sister called me. I worked to like 1 o'clock on Saturdays up in Apopka, Florida. So my sister called me. She said, when you get off work, Milo wants you to come by. I didn't call him Milo. I called him Mr. Steinborn. I said, Milo wants you to come by and rake his yard. I said, okay. So I got off work and beelined it to his house. He had a rake out by his front porch. So I'm out there starting to rake his yard. So he comes out there. In that strong German accent, he said, how come you want to be a wrestler? I said, something I wanted to do since I was a kid. First started watching wrestling, came on out of Chicago. Amphitheater in Chicago.
Yeah, on the Dumont Network.
That's exactly. I started watching that. Holy mackerel. I went to the matches here in Columbus when I was a kid, you know, at the sports arena. And I'm like, good gosh. So anyhow, I said, this is something I always wanted to do. And he said, I'm going to give you a little advice. He said, if you make it, then do get in it. He said, don't ever forget I told you this. He said, keep your mouth shut and don't be like Dick. Wow. That's what he said.
Well,
I never complained about a payoff. I never complained about my bookings. I never complained about the trips.
Well, we were talking about Bob Geigel before, and I know he thought a lot of you.
One of the biggest compliments I've had, Bobby Simmons. You know who Bobby Simmons is?
Yeah, of course, from Georgia.
The referee. He went to a Cauliflower Alley
convention. Well,
I forget what year it was, yeah. And when he came back, he said, I talked to Bob Geigel a long time. He said, if I had a territory that all of them was like the Oates brothers, every wrestler, I wouldn't worry about a thing. I don't drink. I'm not going to tell you, say I never drink anything. I'm just not a drinker. We didn't drink. We didn't smoke. We didn't do drugs. We never missed a show. Never complained about the trips, the money, nothing.
Well, obviously, I mean, during this time period we're talking about in April and May of 75. I mean, you've got the tag titles with your brother and you've got the singles title on yourself. I mean, that's putting it on one guy's back right there. You know,
he approached me one night. Now this is not a Ric Flair story or a Bobby Jagger story. He came to me one night.
In other words, it's true.
I will never lie to you on anything I tell you about what I did or where I've been. Anybody can look it up. I mean,
sure.
These guys, some of the books they write, and, my God, come on.
Well, I sent you all the, you know, for these 2 months. I, you know.
Exactly. So he said, I want to talk to you. This is in Kansas City on Thursday night. He said, I want to talk to you a minute. He said, there's getting ready to be a switch with the belt, the big belt. He said, would you?
You're talking about the world title.
Yes. He said, would you be interested for maybe holding it 6 months? I'm thinking, 6 months? I'll go to Japan. I've already been to Japan, but I'll go to Japan as a world champion.
If you have that title, you'll go around the world twice in 6 months.
In 6 months, I'll go to every territory, NWA territory with that.
Right.
And I'm thinking, and I could have pulled it off. I mean, my work, I'm sure he wouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah, sure.
I'm thinking to myself, I'll be made the rest of my life. And maybe could get it again. That's how much confidence I had in myself. He said, there's one problem. I said, what's the problem? You got to come up with some money. You know about this?
Yeah. You got to put up a deposit for the belt.
He said, you got to come up with 25 grand.
That way they can count on you to drop it when they're ready for you.
Yeah, or if you don't, you go out there and embarrass them. Well, yeah. You know what I'm talking about, doing.
Right.
Getting drunk every night and fighting.
Basically a performance bond, you know, to make
that's
sure
what it
you,
is.
You show the
talent. He said, can you get the money? I said, I can get it. He said, how
it's
you going
like
to get it?
25 grand back then.
25.
Maybe? Yeah.
Cash. But they pay whoever you give that money to in St. Louis, Sam, whoever, they pay you. He said they pay you 10% on that money.
Wow.
Well, that's Sam what he told.
Sam.
So he said.
Sam was a money guy.
He said, you can get the money. He said, where are you going to get it? I said, I can get it from my dad. My dad had money. I said, or I can get it from Fred Ward. I said, the money is no problem. Just putting that thing around me is the problem.
And Fred would want that. You know, Fred would want that.
But what happened? Barnett was running Georgia.
You know, I mean, Fred would, you know, hometown boy being the world champion. I mean.
But Barnett, was he running Georgia then?
He came back to Georgia right at the beginning of 74.
He was back in Georgia. And I'm sure my name came up. Now, Barnett didn't like my brother and I for the simple reason. My father-in-law had been promoting since the 50s on the east coast of Georgia, right?
Mm-hmm. In Savannah.
Fred Ward had three big towns, Macon, Columbus, and Albany, plus his spot shows. So, but my brother married Fred Ward's granddaughter. Now, here's two wrestlers in this territory. They connect on both sides of the state. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And all the families know each other.
It's a power balance thing for Barnett.
Yeah. So, I mean,
he was a politician. I mean, he thought about all that stuff, you know.
He knew the deal. So we get back in Georgia. Barnett's running things. Renesto's still doing the booking. We're rocking and rolling. But my last night in the territory, our last night in Kansas City was in Kansas City, Kansas. But the night before we was in Des Moines, and I hurt my knee. First time I got really hurt. So we had one more shot, so we come back to Georgia. We're rocking and rolling. Place is on fire. Renesto's the booker. I've known Tom forever through my brother-in-law. even before I got in the business. He's taking care of us. We're rocking and rolling. Here we are, two young guys. Now we got some time up under us. We can work with anybody. I'm just right. telling you, we can work with anybody.
Enough, you got enough reps in.
We got enough reps in. So they put the Georgia belts on us. So I keep telling my brother, I saw how much longer my knee's going to make it, man. It was my left knee. So they put those belts on. We worked with Thornton and Les Thornton and Tony Charles. They could go. We had some unbelievable matches. I mean, back and forth, back and forth. Everywhere we went, we worked with them. We worked with the Freebirds. We was working with everybody. Then they brought Gordman and Goliath in. So Barnett calls me at home. He said, y'all are doing good here, man. He said, but Dory Funk called me and said, they want y'all in Japan. I said, really? Now, my brother went to Japan one time while we was out there. This is in 1976. My brother had already been to Japan once, and I had to. He said, they want y'all in Japan. I said, okay. So he said, I'll get back with you on the date. But in the meantime, I got to have knee surgery. Dr. Andrews here in Columbus. You heard of Dr. Andrews?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very, very famous.
I was the first professional athlete he ever operated on. He just come to town. He's the greatest guy. So anyhow.
He fixed a lot of guys.
Jack Nicklaus, everybody. They came here, man. So anyhow, I told him, I said, Dr. Andrews, I said, I got to go to Japan in 9 weeks. He said, I don't know. That's for the scope. He opened me up in the front of my knee. He opened me up on the side. So I made it. So we go to Japan. So Barnett told me, he said, when y'all get back, he said, things will be different. It'll be good for you. I said, okay. We go to Japan. First night there to put the old Asian tag team title on. We're rocking and rolling. We're the tag team from the States or wherever.
I just saw you post that picture the other day of you guys with the belt.
And then the top single was The Butcher. So we got this tour made. We got it made. We are rocking and rolling, eating them up, working. That's a different work over there now. Those jokers don't play, man.
Talk about snug. That's more than snug.
So Joe Iguchi, you know who Joe Iguchi was?
Yeah.
Joe Iguchi.
He's the bald referee guy, right?
Yeah. Dangerous. He's dangerous. He traveled with us. The Japan, like Dory and Terry, they traveled with the Japanese boys. They were superstars over there, you know. They didn't ride with us. We're the heels, right? So Joe Iguchi came to me one night. He said, Oki Quintero, you know who he is? Headbutt from Korea. He said, Headbutt wants you and your brother and Butcher, when this tour's over, to go to South Korea. He paid everything. Baba paid everything except the food. He said, they pay everything. Same money. 5 days. I said, hell yeah, we go. We're going to pay you for a week. I told him, he came to me. That's where they are. They're respectful. I'm the older brother.
You're oldest,
I'm 4 years older. He comes to me. I tell my brother, he's, yeah, maybe. I said, what do you mean, maybe? I said, look. I said, I was out of work 9 weeks before we got here. But I was always good at saving money. Thank God I could save money. I always did. He said, I don't know. I said, what do you mean you don't know? We're already here. All we got to do is let them know back at home. We could be a week late. I'll let you know. So he kept him hawing around. Joe said, brother, make up mine yet? I said, no. He told me. He said, tomorrow night, Headbutt got a note. Send publicity. Now, here we are, the All-Asian Tag Team Champions, coming with Butcher. So I told him, I said, he's got a note tomorrow night. He said, I'll let you know tomorrow.
Oh, man.
We're eating breakfast. I said, are you going? He said, I'm not going. I said, you're not going. He said, no. I said, why? He said, I'm flying. That was Fred Ward's. He was married to Fred Ward's granddaughter. He said, I'm flying Missy to Hawaii. The last night we're here, and I'm catching the plane, I'm gone. I said, okay, you do that. You do that. So he did. We wrestled in the Sumo Palace. I still got my trophy here, those trophies we were holding up. I'm looking at it right now.
That's
awesome, brought the trophies home. I said, you take those trophies home, I'm going to Korea for a week. So now they got to do something different. So there was a kid on our tour named Johnny Graves from Australia. Good kid, good hand. So he jumped at it.
He worked in Memphis some.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I never saw him again.
Yeah, he worked with Dundee and George Barnes when they came in as a tag team.
Really? Mm-hmm. He was a good kid. I never saw him after that. So he goes to Japan with Butcher and I. So they team Butcher and I up. It's not what Oki wanted. You know, so I was there a week. We finish up there, fly back to Tokyo. I come back home. I get home like 9:30 on a Tuesday night here in Columbus. My brother's there to meet. He said, well, I got some news. I'm coming down. I'm getting off the plane. He said, I got some news. I said, what? He said, we've been fired. I said, what? He said, we ain't got a job. I said, Barnett fired us while we were gone. That was his idea to get us out of here.
Yeah, right.
But what happened? What happened? What happened was, while we were gone, he fired Tom Ernesto, and Ole came in. Ole came in. And he said, and his father-in-law, my brother's father-in-law, was Ralph Reed, who was married to Fred Ward's daughter, one of his daughters. He said, Ralph said, Watts wants you to call him. He wants you to come to Oklahoma. I said, that ain't going to happen. I just come home from South Korea, you know, changing planes all day long, all the way across from Far East, and I'm hearing this. I said, that ain't going to happen. I'm tired. I'm exhausted.
And talk about traveling. Yeah. You go to Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So he said, you got to call him. You got to call him. So Ralph called me the next morning. He said, hey, Watts wants you to call him at 12 o'clock. I just got home last night. I said, I'll tell you right now, Ralph, I ain't going out there. Because I haven't heard about it, so I called him. And I knew Bill when he was here. And he treated me good. He said, look, he said, I know you just got back and all. I'll get back on a Tuesday. I'm talking to him on Wednesday. He said, I want you to come out here for me. I said, Bill, I said, I can't do that, man. He said, well, where are you going to go? I said, I don't know. I said, I just got home last night. I said, I just got hit with this. He said, I want you to do me a favor. And he was good to me. I had a sick mother-in-law here. And he said, you stay as long as you need to stay. He said, I understand. So she got better. We went to Kansas City. So he said, do me a favor. He said, fly out here Friday. And we do two TV tapings on Saturday. And he said, I want you to come ahead and just look around, see the guys here and all. And he said, this is what I'll do for you. He said, I'll use you on top. I'll put that belt on you, and I will help you here and there with your trans. He said, I'm going to send you a round trip ticket now. He said, I'll meet you at the airport. He said, you go come? I said, yeah, I'll go. I'll come out there. So I went out there. He picked me up and took me out to dinner. Picked me up the next morning. He stayed at the hotel because he lived in Oklahoma. And he picked me up, and we went. And I walk in the dressing room. There's Dick Murdoch, Carl Cox, Akbar, a lot of good talent. You know, they look at me like they don't know me. They heard of me from TBS, you know.
But you'd never been in that territory before.
Never stepped foot in Oklahoma or Louisiana.
And those guys worked there for years.
Yeah, and so.
Especially Akbar.
What a nice guy. So I did two takes for him. We go back to the airport. He said, what do you think? I'm thinking. I know the kind of workers these guys are. That Murdoch and that Carl Cox.
Yeah, slick.
Good Lord. So I said, I'll come. He said, you start in 2 weeks. I said, okay. So my first night in the territory, it's 2 weeks since I was there. I got to do two more tapings that night. So that night I'm in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. I went by myself. I was kind of a loner. Mm-hmm. I always wanted my own vehicle. But I drove many miles out there. Guys would ride me. I had a brand new van. So my first night in the territory was Pine Bluff, Arkansas. It was in November. So I get to the dressing room. Watts is there. He flew down from Bixby, Oklahoma. He got his own plane. He said, I see you found it. I said, yeah, man, I'm here. I'm ready to go. Blah, blah. Kim Terra walked in. He fired him on the spot. I'm thinking, he just fired Kim Terra, Olympic champion. He didn't make the Thanksgiving show in New Orleans that night. The night before, or the Thursday before. He fired him on the spot. But I did. I stayed out there, and he would fly me.
Watts is another guy who just, his standards were high. He had discipline, and
he didn't
put up with guys who didn't, you know.
He listen, a lot of guys didn't know that was a business. That's the way I made my living. I don't care who you are. You got a boss somewhere.
Right.
Oh, those two guys I love working for. I love working for Tom Renesto. But love working for them. Two guys that people hate. Who did the guys in the business hate the most that they worked for?
Watts, and I can't think of who the other guy was.
Ole,
yeah.
He was the same way. I never had a crossword with Ole. I never had a crossword with Bill Watts. You know what? I did what I was asked to do.
Yeah.
I didn't show up late. Never showed up drunk.
You met his basic discipline.
I did what he asked me to do. Same with Ole.
And you recognized his authority, you know.
And you come in late. You know who was always the first one in the dressing room, wherever I was? Me.
I got a question for you, circling back.
Yes, sir.
How did Geigel finish off your conversation about possibly getting the world title? Did he?
He said, I'm going to do what I can. He said, I'm only one vote. I said, I understand. And it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But
Barnett was booking the champion by then. I mean, Barnett wanted to be, I think Sam wanted him to be president, but the membership wouldn't do it because of his being a homosexual. But they turned the world title booking over to him.
Yeah, he wouldn't have gone for that. He wouldn't have gone for that.
Would have given you too much leverage.
But him making Tommy Rich the world champion for 5 days, to me, that was more of a detriment than not.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of get a little bit of that thinking, but in hindsight, it didn't work. I think it hurt Tommy more than, you know, when guys are baby faces and they're over as much as Dusty and Tommy, you almost got to give them a win. And I always figured that's why they did it. Like, they have to win for the fans to think they ever can win it.
Right.
But if you don't handle it right, and I don't think giving it to him for a week was the right thing to do.
No.
If you're going to give it to him for 6 months or so.
But,
you know,
you go an hour with a world champion, that speaks volumes.
But Harley ain't going to give it to anybody for a 6 month period.
No. And I worked with Harley quite a bit out there when he was
I mean, he would, but not in 1981.
No.
You know, I mean.
But, that business was so good to me, but I try to be good back to it.
Of course. Well, you're going to get into anything. You're going to get out of it what you put in.
I always carried myself like who I was. Not that I was anybody, but I was a professional athlete, and I carried myself like that. I always dressed nice, you know. I used to see some guys, and oh, my gosh.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate you coming on with me today and giving me your time and sharing, you know, your memories with me, and it's an honor. And
I didn't mean to get off of
– No, I loved it. I loved every – I wouldn't change a thing. I was just going to tell you, though. I mean, when you look at, I'm not going to compliment you. When you look at a territory like that back then in the mid 70s, to put both of the major title, the tag title and the singles title, that shows me what Bob Geigel thought of you.
I know he did. I really love working for him.
Now, you sold tickets, and he benefited from it, but you got to have a belief in somebody to do that.
Oh, and you got to trust him.
I mean, as many people as he had in that territory that had been there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I know he was loyal to Bob Brown. I know he was loyal to Pat. I know he was loyal to Mike George.
But and he should have been.
Yeah,
and he should have been.
But he knew that Ronnie Etchison was going to be there, and he knew those guys were going to be there,
right.
And you weren't. I mean, he knew he only had you for a year and a half or so. And so,
but I tell you what, my brother did go back out there. He did go back out there after we got off the road full time, and I opened the gym, and he didn't want nothing to do with it. He went back out there, and I was flying back and forth then. That's when we was working with Lynn Denton and Tony Anthony.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's some heck of a matches out there.
I bet.
With them. So.
I mean, like I said, though, he knew he was only going to have you for 18 months or so. And
right.
I mean, that was a good stretch in a territory back
yeah.
then. Stay that long.
And you know, I really loved it out there. We went to your hometown on a Sunday.
Yep, ran on Sunday at the Armory.
It was kind of cloudy. When we come out, there was snow halfway up to the tires. I didn't think we would ever get back to Kansas City that night.
Well, for a Southern boy like me living here for the last 25 years or whatever, I've had to make that adjustment.
But we had never been in weather like that.
Yeah. Well, I had neither till I moved here.
And we was on one quick story, and I'll let you go.
Yeah.
When he went to Japan, he ordered this gorgeous van before he went to Japan. When he came back, it was in. He had Mack wheels put on it. It was gorgeous. I mean, it was gorgeous. Everybody wanted to ride with us. We're going to Des Moines. Got Ray Candy with us.
Big Ray.
And we noticed the windows are fogging, I mean, icing over inside. I told him, I said, man, turn on that heat. He said, I got it wide open, man. Got ice on the windows inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big van. And all of a sudden, that van stopped. We're in Iowa on the interstate. It's just about dark. So he pulls over. By that time, an Iowa State trooper came up. He came up. My brother got out. He said, what's wrong? He said, I don't know. He said, the van just quit. He said, your gas froze. He said, what? It was 26 below zero.
Yeah.
We'd never been in no. He said, what? He said, just let it sit here. The engine's hot. It'll be all right.
See, I don't know how those guys worked up in Canada, and they worked up in the AWA in North Dakota and South Dakota.
I swear I don't. I mean,
they made those.
You know, it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, get off at the next truck stop, get a can of heat and put in there. And he said, you'll never have that trouble again. Well, we've never been in no weather like that, man.
Right, sure.
We nearly froze to death in that van.
I mean, the first time, I'd probably lived here maybe 3 years when we had our first 20-inch snow here in Columbia. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, I don't have any snow boots, you know.
We didn't have nothing like that from Columbus, Georgia.
Yeah, well. Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Well, listen, I'm going to have you back. We got a lot more to talk
please.
About.
Please. And I want you to know it's an honor for you asking me.
Oh, well, I appreciate you, man.
That's the truth.
I appreciate you. But Jerry Oates, everybody. I'll have more on the Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel podcast. Stay tuned.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, I hope you enjoyed sitting in on our visit today, taking a trip back in the Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel. Hey, visit my Substack channel, at TonyRichards4. Subscribing to my newsletter helps support the work I do to preserve pro wrestling history. Plus, you get it in your email inbox every single morning, and you never miss an issue of the newsletter or a podcast if you have a free subscription. If you have a paid subscription, that supports my work even more, and you'll get special stuff in the vault. Updates on my Dory Funk Sr. book, which is coming along really, really nicely. I'm close to the end of the research phase and about to start the writing phase later on this fall. I appreciate your investment of time in our show today, and I hope you like and subscribe our podcast and our newsletter. And until next time, bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel podcast. Tune in for another great episode next week, interviewing wrestlers, referees, and media personalities that have made the sport of professional wrestling great. Be sure to follow us on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Time Tunnel. We'll release a new episode soon. Don't you dare miss it.